This Is Money's podcast is brought to you in partnership with the Financial Services Compensation Scheme. Check your financial products at FSCS Protected at fscs.org.uk/thisismoney.
Welcome to This Is Money. I'm Georgie Frost, and alongside me and editor Simon Lamb, but today is assistant editor Lee Boyce. And just what is the point in saving? Ennis and I wield the axe this week, followed by Marcus and Saga. But where can savers go now? Well, how about Nationwide? It's got a new lottery-style product, paying 1% interest, but is it any good? Also, digital hacks, and whose responsibility is it anyway? Simon gets clobbered for being loyal, and Lee gets his running shoes on. And don't forget, you can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. But first, what a horrid week for savers. First came NS&I, making it even more difficult to win on their extremely popular premium bonds, and therefore taking the effective rate of interest from 1.4% to 1.3%, which seems to be the not-so-magic number this week, actually, as 2 days later, Saga and Marcus, oh, the saviour of savers, cut their rates from 1.35% to 1.3%. Marcus only launched in September 2018, 1.5% it was, with a 0.15% bonus. Oh, the heady times, I even got one. So where do savers turn now? We've already discussed that high-profile interest-paying current accounts, Santander 123 and TSB's Classic Plus, are cutting their rates in May. So, Lee, firstly, let's go to NS&I. And every time I think about NS&I, I think about your little story that you had about how Americans just love the idea of premium bonds. Unique situation, though, with them as opposed to other banks cutting their rates, because, well, explain to us why.
Well, exactly, Georgie. Yeah, so as we have previously mentioned on podcast past, Americans on that Reddit thread a long time ago couldn't believe that a product like premium bonds exists. And it seems like Britain's kind of feel the same way. You know, more than 20 million people have premium bonds, which is quite an outstanding number. And for NS&I products in a whole, there's 25 million people that have NS&I savings products, whether that be premium bonds or something else. Now, this week, they have cut the rates on a number of the products, including premium bonds. It is Treasury-backed, so basically up to £1 million that people can put into some of these accounts instead of the usual £85,000 financial services compensation scheme protection. People find it a kind of a safe place to put their cash. They feel safe putting money with a treasury-backed place. Whereas banks are, you know, have this 85 grand limit. We saw in the financial crisis the wobbles that some of the big banks that you'd never expect had. And that plays into a lot of people's minds. Now, what's happened this week is what they have to do is they have something called net financing and how much money comes in, how much money goes out. It's quite a finely balanced thing. They have to make sure that they don't set rates too high, otherwise they end up with too much cash coming in. But they can't set rates too low because otherwise they might see a lot of outflows. So it's a real balancing act. And actually what happens with the money with NS&I, so when you invest, is that basically it's used by the Treasury to manage national debt. So something like 9% of debts held by the government are kind of backed in this way. The money from NS&I gets used. It's quite a massive number of the national debt. It's something like £80 million that are in NS&I products. So it shows you just how popular. Do you remember those pensioner bonds from a couple of years ago? They launched and it was crazy. People went crazy for it. So they've lowered some rates this week.
It's not the first time, is it? Even though they're desperately popular, but, you know, didn't they
lower them recently
as well?
I would argue that they're a victim of their own success, as in people find them, as I say, it's a popular place to put money.
Yeah.
And I can totally understand why. Something like premium bonds, where you are essentially in a lottery-style product where you're guaranteed to get your money back, and you have a chance of winning a couple of million pound prizes, it really taps into our sort of culture of wanting to win big. You know, without playing something like an actual lottery where you put a couple of quid in, if you don't win, that money's gone, you could take this money back out. So people like it for that reason. Now, NS&I have cut the underlying rate on that. So the typical percentage rate that you'd expect to get over the course of a year with money saved in it, of course, it varies for people, because you might end up winning big or you might not end up winning anything at all. So As I say, it always causes a bit of a stir when NS&I cut rates. But you have to... I'm not going to defend NS&I. I'm not going to sit here and go, oh, you know, they should have done it. But you look at what the big banks have been doing in recent years. Rates are incredibly low. You know, easy access rates on offer from big banks are, you know, rock bottom. Challenger banks have been the real sort of rays of light, you could argue. Marcus Bank, as you say, launched 1.5% in September 2018. There was so much fanfare behind that account. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a lot of column inches written about that. They're just playing to the market. You know, they want to be the best buy rate, but they're not going to pay over the odds. If other banks aren't offering anywhere near what they're offering, they're just going to always be, I think, a best buy, but they'll just do whatever the market's doing. So markets dropped a little bit, so they've dropped their rate a little bit. I tell you where it's really, really suffered in the last sort of 6 months is fixed rates. The top fixed rate now on a year is 1.65%.
Why?
It's just a lack of competition. And we look at things like we are in an era at the moment of rock bottom borrowing rates. So personal loan rates, absolutely crazy low, 2.5%, 3% if you qualify for those best rates. For bigger sums, that is a really quite low rate. And then you've got things like mortgage rates. I mean, the mortgage rate, 1%, 1.5%. You know, it is a crazy low environment for those types of products. And those products have been offered by big banks. So if you're a homeowner or you're looking for something like a personal loan, you know, you're not doing too badly because rates have fallen so far. But for savers, that's where the trade-off has come. You know, it's been to the detriment of savers. Savers are struggling to find proper returns. And something like this NS&I move just infuriates people. But they'll be infuriated for a little while. But I guarantee there won't be massive outflows because where are you going to go?
Well, that's the point, isn't it? Where do people go?
Where do you go? You know, there isn't really a whole lot of options. I'd be very surprised if there's going to be a mass exodus of NS&I customers because, you know, so many people hold premium bonds and they like that idea of being in a draw, and then they go, well, what am I going to go get an easy access rate of 1.35%? So, you know, we had that headline this week about what is the point of saving. There is still a massive point to saving. And as I say, I don't forecast a massive NS&I cull just yet.
All right, Simon, answer the question. What is the point of saving? Is there one?
So you've got some money set aside for a rainy day in case your boiler stops working, your clutch on your car goes, you lose your job, something bad happens to you, that you can build up money to do something that you want to do in the future. Maybe you want to go on holiday. Maybe you want to start a business. Maybe you've got crazy hopes of saving a deposit for a house, which will take you quite a long time. Perhaps you're doing it for later life, for retirement. The point of saving is to give yourself choices and options and opportunities and to make sure that you're not caught short. Obviously, once you get beyond a certain point, you're probably better off investing because the best way of beating inflation and getting above inflation returns over the long term has time and time again proven to be investing in a combination of the stock market, which is where you get most of your gains, and has traditionally been in bonds, which is considered the safer end of the investment spectrum. That's effectively lending companies money. Obviously, that involves a risk, but if you want the higher reward, you get the risk. The problem with savings rates at the moment is we have a glut of savings. There is too much savings, too many people chasing returns with their savings, and not enough people who want to borrow money. The banks cutting rates are a direct product of caution around the world. The fact that government bond rates are so low. I mean, to put the NS&I premium bonds rate into perspective, bearing in mind that this is the government raising money, you know, in order to fund itself, in a sense, if it was to borrow that money on UK gilts, which are government bonds over 10 years, it would be at a rate of 0.585%. And if the government wants to borrow money for 30 years, the current yield on 30-year UK gilts is 1.05%. This is why there's an argument being put forward that we should be borrowing money to spend on infrastructure, on improving Britain for the future, maybe just on fixing the potholes. Listen to moans past of Mr. Lambert here. there is this issue. And if there were more people who wanted to borrow money from the banks, that we're in this interesting position where banks are involved in a mortgage price war because banks are more keen to lend money to people than people are to borrow that money. Banks would like to grow their mortgage business faster than people would like to borrow the money off them. Now, that may be a product of caution. It may be a product of the fact that house prices are simply too high, and in order to get to the point where you want to borrow the money, you have to raise a whacking great deposit in order to buy your first home, move up the ladder, etc. It may just be a reflection that people see the housing market as too much of a lottery in this country, and so they're not willing to make the move and fund that move, or that moving costs are too high. Maybe we need a stamp duty cut. Who knows? But we're in a very weird position where, after savers paying the price for a financial crisis caused by borrowers, when interest rates were cut to emergency levels, pretty much the only hope that I can now see for those savers getting any better interest rates that stick around for any period of time is for borrowers to ride to the rescue and start borrowing more money. Yet, do we really want that to happen? Because we're already coming from a point where people have very, very large personal debts and are borrowing huge sums on their mortgages. And if you read any house price story at the moment talking about this slight pickup in the market that occurred before the election, some of it has been after the election as well, all of the comments from people are saying, why is this a good thing? Great, houses getting more expensive. Oh, brilliant, houses are going to get more expensive again. Why do you think this is a good thing? And so on and so on. So we find ourselves in this almost impossible position. But even though we have that almost impossible position, to answer your question, what is the point in saving? Well, firstly, if you think all of those things I've just said might at some point cause us some problems down the line, then it would be a good idea to have some money saved away for those rainy days, because they could get quite rainy. And secondly, because once you've saved up enough money, you can start investing, and that's the thing that's going to make you money over the long term. And at some point in the future, 10, 20, 30 years' time, you'll pat yourself on the back and go, I'm glad I did that, because I've got more money now than I would have had otherwise.
Lee nodding along there. I want to talk about light at the end of the tunnel, though. Is there, I mean, we've got Nationwide's new offering, which sounds sort of a little bit premium bondy.
Yeah, I'll get into that in a second. What I would say about my view of what is the point of saving, I've got a four-pronged approach at the moment. So one of those is to have some money tucked away in savings, making sure for that rainy day fund. I'm not that bothered about the rate. I'm not going to rate chasing, right? It's just to have that pot of cash. Overpaying the mortgage 10% a month, I think, is quite a worthwhile endeavour at the moment if you have a mortgage. That is something that I'm doing. I started investing a couple of years ago. I'm glad that I started investing a couple of years ago. And I've upped my pension contributions. All of these things, that would have been cash that I probably would have maybe sort of 4 or 5 years ago diverted into a savings account. But I'm kind of spreading the risk a little bit more and trying to get a bit of better returns overall while still having that kind of savings pot anchor. That's what I think is quite key, just to have that rainy day fund, build that rainy day fund, as Simon says, and then feel the confidence to do these other things as a kind of, you know, other factors, other ways to spread your cash around. Now, Nationwide, yes, they've launched, I would say, something that was a little bit out of the ordinary for what is Britain's biggest building society. I wouldn't have necessarily thought this is something that they would do. Now, the reason I say that, they've launched this Start to Save account. It's an easy access account. It has a 1% interest rate. You can only put £100 a month away into it. So it's basically aimed at people that have no savings, which, to be honest, is a worthwhile endeavour, because there are a lot of people in this country that don't have a savings pot whatsoever. There are a lot of people in this country that have said in the last few years, what is the point of saving? You know, what is the point? And Nationwide is kind of trying to tap into those people that are doing that with this kind of prize draw. Now, this prize draw is offering £100. Depending on how many people save into the account will depend on how many £100 prizes there are in the pot. And it's a quarterly draw. So it's not every month, it'll be every 3 months. And you have to have saved £50 per month each month to qualify for the draw. So it's a kind of way to have those prizes, have that kind of element of being involved in something where you can go, oh, I might win £100 this month. But then when you compare it to NS&I with its underlying rate dropping to 1.3%, as I said earlier, you're not guaranteed to get that, but that is its underlying rate. The interesting bit about premium bonds is that there is two prizes on offer that are life-changing sums of money. There are £2 million pound prizes in that pot. Yes, the odds are long. Yes, the odds are about to get longer with this move. But that excites people. That seven-figure sum excites people, right? But the other thing that NS&I are doing, actually, they offer £100 prizes and £50 prizes, but they are cutting in half the number of those prizes from May onwards. Right, so those smaller prizes, you're going to be far less likely to win in the coming months, which might not deter people. It might not make people too upset. They'd probably be more upset if there was only £1 million prize rather than two, or if something else was tinkered with, because people, I feel like that idea of winning big. And you've also, actually, this is more like the Halifax Saver that they introduced a number of years ago, where basically if you hold £5,000 in one of Halifax's savings accounts and you are registered for its prize draw, it's got three prizes on offer of £100,000, which again, £100,000, I think people will look at and go, that's a great sum of money. I think £100, I don't know if it's going to set the world alight, but I understand the sentiment behind it. I understand that Nationwide is aiming to get those people that have no savings pot, who want that kind of element of safety, some sort of percentage rate on their savings. 1% when you compare it to Marcus, 1.35% on that kind of money isn't massive, and you're in some sort of prize draw. I can kind of get it. I think it might get tinkered with in the coming years. I might be wrong, but you know, at least Nationwide are doing something. At least they're actually like attempting to get people to save some money.
So just before we finish on the whole premium bonds thing, I mean, there is a very good reason for keeping your money in the premium bonds, I personally think. And I think that this is why lots of people will do it. Lots of people will just do it because of inertia. But if they thought through the process, if you're going to earn a really low rate on your savings, which let's face it, even the best rates at the moment are really low rates, but if you want to put your money into something that is cash savings and protected, either in the case of the premium bonds by the government or in a savings account up to £85,000 by the FSCS, then you're comparing rubbish rate with rubbish rate. 1.3% return, average return on the premium bonds with 1.3% return on your Marcus account or whatever. So you might as well keep it in the one where you could win a prize. I mean, the thing is, you're probably not going to win £1 million, right? But you might do. You could do. You can't win £1 million in a Marcus account. On top of that, you might not get that 1.3% return. You might do worse than that because it's an average rate of return. But you might do better. And if you do better, then, you know, it's like great. And also, there's something, if you've got a reasonable amount of money in the premium bonds, say, talk about these people who've got like £15,000 to £20,000 in there, that should mean that throughout the year they get a fair few letters where they win about £25, right? That's probably going to feel much more satisfying than looking at their bank statement at the end of the year when they get their year's interest added from their account. Now what you can do, because obviously NS&I have done loads and loads and loads of stuff over the years to upgrade their system, so you can log in, you can see your accounts, you can see the prizes that you've won and everything like that. You don't just get a bumper ream of paper anymore. Thank God they've stopped doing that. Every time you win, you get 20 pages. And you can go in and you can work out what your own personal rate of return over the last year has been. And you can work out what your own personal rate of return over the year before has been. Now, you might think that if you've done really well, that it would be a good idea to stick with the premium bonds, wouldn't you? Because you think, oh, last year I should have got a 1.4% rate because the rate hasn't been cut yet. I actually got a 2.5% rate. I'm doing all right. I'm going to stick with the premium bonds. Well, statistically speaking, that is probably the point when you should get out of the premium bonds. Because if you work on the basis of the reversion to the mean, so if you take the average, okay, you don't just get the average all the way along. Things go up, things swing up, they go above the line. Things swing down, they go below the line. At some point, you will revert to the mean. And the longer you spend above the line, the more likely it is in the future
that if there's going to be a reversion to the mean, which most people do tend to believe does happen with stuff, you will then spend a prolonged period under the line. So actually, the best time to stay in premium bonds is if you look at the last year or the last 2 years and you've only won 25 quid and your rate of return has been absolutely terrible, you should stick with them. If you look at your account and you're doing really, really well, I've got 5%. Oh, wow. It's all going really, really well. Get out now.
Yeah.
This is not financial advice, by the way. I don't know. Any statisticians listening to this, perhaps you could email us, editor@thisismoney.co.uk, and tell us if what I just said is right or if it's wrong. I'm pretty sure I'm right because more clever people than me have explained this to me before. But also, if you look at your own rate of return on the premium bonds and you have done better than you should have done, better than the average over the past year, does that then decrease the chance that you will win the jackpot? I mean, obviously, it decreases the chance that you should then get that 1.3% return in the future. But are you less likely to win the jackpot?
Right, we're going to leave savings to one side before Simon gets even more geeky than he... No, it's just not possible, is it? But we are going to talk about digital services now, because we have so many YouTube, Amazon, shopping accounts, social media. Does that all count? I suppose it does. Spotify. All connected through things like Facebook, our email address, or LinkedIn in some other way. So what happens when a breach happens along the chain? Whose responsibility is it? Now, I ask this question particularly because you've got to read a query from someone who's Spotify, and if you don't know, that's all about music. Well, I don't know. Some people don't know what these things are. It's an app where you can download a lot of music, and you pay about $9.99 for a premium service every month, so you don't get adverts. Anyway, so this person's Spotify account looks to have been hacked by someone who, the biggest crime here is their taste in music, I'll be totally honest with you, some Swedish trance efforts. However, probably not great for this person who's paying $9.99 and thinks that someone might be sort of hijacking, you know, what he's paying for and then listening to their rubbish music. But anyway, they spoke to Spotify, who said the most probable and common explanation is, and I quote, "The unauthorized user was able to obtain or derive your credentials based on information exposed in a previous data breach likely to have occurred on another platform or service." Are they passing the buck here, or are they probably right on this?
Firstly, I would say, Georgie, like, you're totally right. We're in an age now where we have all sorts of streaming services. We have all sorts of online accounts. A lot of us tend to use the same email address and the same password for a lot of different services. And for that reason, like, a lot of us are quite vulnerable to fraud in different ways. And I've seen actually online, there are criminals out there that actually offer people things like Spotify, Netflix, stuff like that, for a far cheaper price, because they've managed to get a whole load of credentials that you can log in on. Mm-hmm. So basically, people will pay a much smaller fee to then use people's credentials, and people's email addresses and things get sort of nicked all the time. There are actual websites where you can input your email address and you can see where your details have been compromised, what website, what date, and it could be quite interesting. And a lot of us now, we're at an age where you might have had an email address for 15 years, 20 years, you know, we've used it for all sorts of things that you would not even dream of doing now, but that's when the internet felt like a safer, less criminal zone,
the innocent days,
carefree days. Now what this case also highlights a little bit to me is that a lot of these companies are massive. You know, Spotify has more than 200 million customers. You know, some of them are premium customers, some of them are free customers where they do listen to adverts. Sometimes, even with places like Amazon, you know, they're massive firms. They offer things for a kind of cheap price, and the customer service, in my opinion, lacks a little bit. So something like this, I, you know, you've had your account, someone is listening to music that's not yours. It's coming.
Explain the story a little bit more. So they discovered the trance music.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
So if you're not a Spotify user, quickly, as you pointed out, you can download the app or you can have it on a laptop. Mm-hmm. You can listen to whatever music you want. You can make playlists. You can download music.
Yeah.
And it's basically got a catalogue of everything.
It's everything, isn't it?
Pretty much everything. And
music. Podcast.
What's happened in this scenario is someone else is managing to use this person's account and all of their music is coming in. It's infiltrating into the playlist, and you can't use it on more than one device at the same time. So you might be getting stopped from. You're being chucked out of your own account, right? And you think, well, you're going to take that to Spotify. They're going to take it seriously, and they're going to stop this happening straight away. They were advised to change their password, and it happened again. So there's obviously some sort of way of manipulating this. And actually, before I came on this podcast, I Googled Spotify, and a couple of the auto-completes were Spotify scam, Spotify account hacked. They were some of the things that were being auto ended. So it must be more of a problem. We found other people that are facing similar problems. And to be honest, Georgie, it does feel a little bit like the buck was passed in this. I'm not sure how seriously it was taken. We managed to
What have they done about it?
Well, we managed to get the account reset in the end.
But he's lost some of the downloaded tracks. I mean, it's not like you pay for them, you pay for the subscription.
Yeah, exactly. So
but
it's just
still,
it's more of a kind of inconvenience and a bit
creepy.
Of hassle. And this person actually didn't pay $9.99 a month for it. It was a 6-month free trial,
right,
which you can get from quite a lot of places. But you still have to input your card details to get that trial because at the end, you know, they want you to stay on as a customer. It's not really a great way to convince someone to stay on. And I think it's quite scary that, you know, an account and something as big as this can be manipulated in this way. Yes, there's no detrimental loss to the person whose Spotify account it is in the fact that they haven't had anything stolen per se, but it's still kind of a bit scary, isn't it?
This
can happen. It actually happened to me a couple of years ago with my Instagram account. Somehow someone got into it, changed my username.
Wow.
And I couldn't really figure out why you'd want to sort of hack into my Instagram. What was the benefit?
Yeah.
A couple of spammy links went out, and I don't use it that often.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like, you feel almost like personally sort of like, I don't know, it's quite personal, isn't it? Something like Instagram, something like your music. It's like your personality in that little bit of app. You might have been, I've been a Spotify customer for the best part of a decade.
Wow.
I've got all sorts of
lists
curated in there and all sorts of things that actually I sometimes revisit from 5-6 years ago and think, that was a really good playlist that I made back then. It's almost like snapshots of how you were feeling in the past. As I say, you know, this case just highlights for me how some of these companies, you know, our email addresses are quite weak. You know, people's account details can be quite weak. And if that sounds like you, if you use the same email address and password for a whole host of different services, I would probably think again.
Well, I can see how this would be exceptionally annoying because my music streaming service, I'm not going to mention which one in case anybody who listens to this podcast decides to hack me. Mine was hacked by my own wife. In fact, I think it's actually in my wife's name, not mine. So,
but you tried to hack it.
It gets to the start of December.
Yeah.
I'm like, Christmas playlist. So I go to put the Christmas playlist on. The Christmas playlist exists, and it says Christmas playlist.
Yeah.
The Christmas playlist is empty. What's going on here? So I turn it off, I turn it back on again. Still empty. Maybe there's something wrong with my phone. Get my wife's phone when she comes back. Pick that up. Christmas playlist is empty. Next day I say to her, Christmas playlist is empty. Do you know what's happened to it? She's like, yeah, I might have done that. It's like, what? She said, well, Georgina, our youngest daughter, had added the entire thing to the middle of her playlist that she has on the phone that she insists we listen to. And my wife had got so fed up of listening to the Christmas songs in the summer that she deleted them all. But she didn't just delete them all from our youngest daughter's playlist, who'd added them to her playlist. She deleted them all full stop from everything, including the Christmas playlist.
Yeah.
So, yes, that marriages was how, that was how I discovered
this, Simon,
in early December that the Grinch had stolen the Christmas playlist.
Honestly, I don't know how you got over it, but I hope you and Mrs. Lambert have sorted out your difficulties and the playlist. I mean, to be fair, if anyone hacked into mine, they'd probably improve my playlist. But anyway, Simon, a little bit of a rant from you, if that's all right, because we're just moving on, but I want to talk about loyalty. Oh, how we like a good debate about this, eh? No, we're not going to go back there. But Halifax hiked your home insurance by 29%. So could it tell me why? Could it tell me why? You're asking the question if it could tell. Could they tell you why? Or was it a bit more aggressive than that?
No, that's what I wanted to know,
all right,
actually.
Right.
So at the start of the year, I got my contents insurance renewal from Halifax. It was suspiciously higher than last year. Mm. It was £263, in fact, whereas last year it was £204.
Oof, that is...
Quick bit of calculation on the phone in my pocket,
yeah,
proving Lee's point a couple of podcasts past. You're not going to carry a calculator around in the pocket, yeah, for the rest indeed of your life, are you? It turns out we do. That's a spicy 29% increase. So, after a while, a reasonable amount of time to dwell on such a thing, I finally got round to calling Halifax up and spoke to their renewals team, explaining to them that I wasn't happy about the price going up by that much and hoping that they would take some money off. Instead, I hit something of a brick wall, because Halifax's renewal team is not blessed with the ability to tell you why your premium has gone up by 29%. Mm-hmm. I asked about this a number of times, approached it from a number of different angles, and discovered that I was still meeting said brick wall. The extremely helpful lady from Halifax, and I'm not being sarcastic here, she was very helpful, went off and spoke to her manager, and she came back and she said, "I'm sorry that my manager can't tell you the reason either." So I did start talking about loyalty penalties. Are you aware about the loyalty penalty and stuff like that at the time? She said, "Yeah, well, I've heard of that." And I was like, "Well, don't you think this sounds a bit like one going up 29%? And I find it very difficult to believe that the renewals team can't give me a reason. Mm. Well, she couldn't give me a reason. She just said, "All I can tell you is that your premium has gone up." Mm. So I sort of
could
wanted...
you not have fudged around it?
Well,
like, you know...
no, I wanted to
just lie to
I just
me.
I just wanted a reason, even, yeah, just anything.
Yeah,
even if it was just some mealy mouthed excuse, yeah, right? That was obviously nonsense.
Brexit.
Yeah, like when the banks used to cut your savings rate and blame the low interest rate environment when actually rates had stayed the same for ages and ages and ages, or things like that. But so the only thing I could do to pursue this in my attempt to try and find out why my premium had gone up so much was to make an official complaint. So I did.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's where the fun really started, because a couple of weeks later, I got a call from Halifax's complaints team. My complaint had been investigated.
Right, good.
And they had an answer for me.
Yeah.
And I need to read this verbatim.
Okay.
The answer was, "The way premiums are calculated is confidential to Halifax." That was it. They couldn't tell me why my premium had gone up 22 times faster than inflation. It did have some other details to hand, such as that 2 years earlier, my policy had only cost me £147. So actually, in 2 years, it had gone up 79%. It could also confirm that it would like to give me a loyalty discount, but unfortunately, I was not eligible for one. Which, like a red rag to a bull, I bet you can guess what I asked next. Why aren't I eligible for a loyalty discount? Can you explain? Well, it turned out that was a secret too.
Right.
I couldn't explain why I wasn't eligible for a loyalty discount, just that I wasn't. However, they were confident that they had calculated my premium correctly.
Okay.
But that
I assume
was it.
You didn't take it lying down, Simon. You didn't throw out the big, I am.
No, I didn't. I didn't.
You're not
I gave it. I gave it a lot of talk about the loyalty penalty, about these investigations, yeah, and everything like that. Well, I was writing all this down. I was being a customer. I was experiencing it as a customer.
Yeah.
You know, and they're genuinely the only snippets of wisdom that Halifax could offer me were that we do urge you to shop around. It's like,
thanks.
Great, thanks. Loyalty penalty
Leave
in
us
action.
If you don't like it.
And also, we do realise that sometimes being a loyal customer doesn't pay off.
Wow.
I have nothing more to say at that point, other than to say, yes, of course, I did not renew my insurance with Halifax.
Yeah. Did you go... And you can also rate us on iTunes if you like our podcast, because you'll be in it. So I assume that's it then. That's the end of the story for
it
you.
It is. But the irony is that I've not even only been a Halifax customer for 2 years. 2 years ago, I had to become a new Halifax customer because my other Halifax policy had gone up. So I had to reapply and become a new customer. I've actually been a Halifax contents insurance customer for about 4 or 5 years. And they had been. People have said, we shouldn't have gone with Halifax. They're never competitive on price. Actually, it has been one of the better value ones, and also had cover that I needed. Like, it had better cover for my bike and personal possessions and things like that without paying extras than others. And they can see, when they look on my system, they can see that even though I had taken out that new policy 2 years ago, they can see that actually my insurance with them goes back about 4 or 5 years. But even then, they couldn't help me anymore. Loyalty penalty in action. I mean, the Competition and Markets Authority are currently investigating the loyalty guarantee.
I just don't think we should take this lying down, Simon. And no one in this studio here abuses the position of power and responsibility we have as financial journalists. However, you do discover when you are investigating other people's stories, and sometimes when you get to the end of the line, like you just have, you just say, by the way, I'm going to actually do this for a story. Can I speak to your press department? Oh, they have an answer. And nothing drives me mad more than when you can use a threat like that, for example, and then they will help you out eventually. Because what about those poor everyday people, the readers, the listeners, who don't shout the loudest and don't get answers? So, Simon, we can't take this lying down. I expect a response, please, from the Halifax press team. I called it Halifax there as well. I'm so incensed. Halifax. I would like a response, please. Lee, you look like you're about to...
Well, look, it's justified, you know, as a business that you can factor in risks and put up prices, but be open,
fine,
but
give us a reason
be open
why.
And honest. And I think it's absolutely disgraceful that they can't give an actual, you know, reason for prices going up. If there was a reason, someone wouldn't be so annoyed. Yeah. He just wants a reason.
We might sort of hammer them for their fudged reason, but you know, at least you get one.
Because we haven't got one.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I wonder if people up and down the country all the time have seen bills, you know, their insurance bills go up. They phone up, no, sorry, your bill's gone up. Well, why? Can't tell you. What kind of business is that? I think, you know, it's not a way to run an insurance division.
Because to be fair, I wasn't looking for a good reason. I was just looking for a reason.
Yeah.
I'd have taken any reason, really. If they'd have said, because the sky's been much more blue this year, I'd have gone, don't really see how that works with insurance premiums, but, and I thought it was a bit grey for a lot of the summer, but okay.
Yeah, this story's not over for me, I'm afraid, Simon. It's not over for me. I'm not happy. I'm not happy. But Lee, you're...
It's all right, you can phone up and pretend to be me if you like.
There'd be a lot of swearing involved.
I do not swear. I don't raise my voice. I don't get angry. I'm disappointed, Lee. I'm disappointed. Anyway, you're going to talk about something that I do actually enjoy talking about, because I jumped right onto Twitter when you asked... Does anybody have a fitness tracker and are you a fan of them? And I went, I love mine. And then I didn't feel so great when you told me about your mum absolutely smashing it. And I don't mean literally smashing the fitness tracker, that would. But although she does walk so far that she might actually smash it. But we've put dehydrated watermelons to one side, haven't we, Lee? We're now on to, is there a theme with the sort of food? It's because it's for your consumer article. Is this a losing weight theme or a...
No, it's just a look at what is kind of growing in popularity,
right.
Yeah. So we did the veganism. I've had a look at Klarna.
Yep.
We've had a now look at Fitbits. And I've got lots of exciting things in the pipeline for this column in the future weeks. And it's not just fitness related. But I have a confession. I've become a fitness tracker idiot, I suppose.
I'm so glad, because we've had this discussion in the past over years of knowing you, Lee. And you've been really anti-fitness tracker. And then all of a sudden it's like, I can see it on your wrist.
It's glistening on
my
wrist.
You have no idea how cool this is.
I am a little bit of a technophobe, I'll confess. You know, I still like my paper train ticket. I won't go onto a contactless card. I still like cash. I will use contactless, but I like a blend of everything. And I didn't envision myself ever getting a fitness tracker, just because I didn't really think it was for me. But I realised, actually, someone was showing me what you could do with it. And I was quite interested. You can track your sleep, which I'm actually really quite... I'm quite fascinated with. With a young child, I was kind of interested to know how it sort of interrupts sleep.
Trust me, that fascination with how little sleep you're getting.
I don't know. I like the way it breaks down into REM sleep, how it goes into deep sleep, light sleep. I like that. And when I get awoken either by baby or the cat pouring at my face, I find that interesting. And also, I was finding myself actually on my phone, it was like a fitness tracker, but it just doesn't work very well. But I kind of did get interested in how many miles that I was covering and how many steps that I do in a day.
Yeah.
And actually, I bought a fitness tracker in November, 70 quid, a Fitbit. A lot more people now have fitness trackers or smartwatches. They're quite popular. It's meant to be a £500 million industry in the next couple of years. It's estimated that 1 in 3 Britons have some sort of fitness tracker. And the latest forecast is that globally, 1 billion people by 2030 will have either a smartwatch or a fitness tracker. So the trend is there. And I was just interested in the last few months to see how it goes. Now, be honestly, the way I was prompted into this was a story from my mum, who unfortunately got diagnosed with COPD, which, without going into a lot of details, it involved a lot of years of heavy smoking. Now, luckily, she stopped smoking when she did in 2005. And what it means is that she has a lot of shortness of breath.
Yeah.
So she couldn't walk 5, 10, 15 seconds. It was almost impossible to go for a walk with her, which is a real shame when you have a young baby and, you know, pleasant summer and you're walking with pram and thinking, we do a lot of walking, my wife and I, and we couldn't really invite my mum because she was just so out of breath all the time. And then on her birthday last year, my sister bought a very inexpensive fitness tracker. I think it was 20, 30 quid, just as a kind of... I'll get it for her. And we're thinking, that's just going to gather dust in the cupboard. There's no way. My mum can't walk a couple of thousand steps, let alone what people tend to track on these things. But lo and behold, for whatever reason, it was the right thing for my mum. She put it on. She realised how few steps she was doing in a day as a retiree. She just wasn't doing the miles. And we kept on saying to her that you've got to take baby steps to your fitness. You just got to do within what you can do. And actually, she's taken it on board. And she's built up her miles. So she got over that 10,000 step mark, which was kind of like a benchmark. If anyone out there listening has a fitness tracker, kind of gets set on 10,000 steps. That's what we're kind of told to do.
It's a random arbitrary figure that's ever been plucked out of the air. But
I find the amount of water you mentioned.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which has got no basis in science, by the way.
That's fine. But it's, I'm angry at those things because I actually think it's a good target.
It's a good target. And look, it buzzes at me if I haven't walked 250 steps, which in this office happens every hour. So it's like you haven't walked 250 steps and you think, blimey, I haven't got off my desk for an hour. Like, it's just those little things that you just wouldn't do, I think, without a fitness tracker. Anyway, since last July, my mum has slowly built up. She tries to beat her step target every single day. She's now up to a point where she's built her fitness up to where she's walking a hell of a lot more than she ever would have done, to the point a couple of weeks ago when she turned up at my house on a Saturday. I was like, oh, I gave her a hug. I was like, oh, you're cold. And she'd walked, you know, almost this 5-6 miles. If you told me that last summer, I would have laughed at you. There was no way. She's lost a couple of stone in weight. She's just a completely different person. And now I'm looking forward to this summer where we can go for long walks with my daughter.
Marvelous.
And I think it was a story that was worth sharing, because I would never have written that. Thought I'd written that story this time last year. There's no way I would have imagined it would work for my mum. I'm not saying it would work for people listening that don't have one. Perhaps it wouldn't, but it flipped some sort of switch in my mum's mind. Yeah. And that's why I got one. And actually, sometimes when I'm sitting at my desk now, I think, cool, I haven't actually done that many steps today. I should go for a long walk over. We've got Kensington Gardens, Hyde Park around the corner. Why aren't I going over there when the weather's good? And it has prompted me to do way more walking over there, and I feel better for it. It's good for your mental well-being. It's good for, you know, your fitness. I'm not saying I'm going out there and running every lunchtime, but I'm going on a nice long walk and doing sometimes up to 20,000 steps in a day on a working day, which is a lot, just to put that in context, a couple of times a week. That's all I'm doing. And when the weather gets better, I'm going to do it a little bit more. So hey, it's worked for me, it's worked for my mum, and now even my wife, who I never in a million years thought would get a fitness tracker. She, I don't want to know about my sleep. I don't want to know how many steps I'm taking. She's like, can you get me one for Valentine's Day? I was like, that is basically like asking for a set of scales. So I'm glad she asked me. Get more fit.
They're interesting ones. They have their detractors, because whenever anything is popular, then you find the counter case and, you know, people that have them. Some people put on extra weight because I think they thought, well, if I can reach 10,000 steps, then that's okay. I can have donuts.
Which is, of course, not the way to look at it. Yeah, exactly.
But I like your mum, got it for the same reason. Serious back injury, couldn't walk properly. So it basically I learned to rehabilitate using it. And it does become quite gamification, as long as I think, you know, when you don't have it on, you think, oh, well, what's the point? But when I had it on, it was like, oh, shall I get the stairs or not? Well, how many have I done today? I'm going to get the stairs. It definitely encourages me to walk a little bit. I'm not obsessed with it anymore. I think I might have been for a little while.
I think you do go through a bit of an obsessive stage of it, but you let it prompt your life a little bit, but not to an absolute extreme.
I've had it so long now, so it's like,
it just becomes part and parcel, doesn't it?
Another thing that's interesting about fitness trackers, though, as well, is the Apple one was launched not too long ago and didn't do as well. We don't really know because they don't release figures, but as people thought. And some of the more advanced ones haven't done well. And it seems to be that actually we kind of like simple when it comes to fitness.
I think you can get it quite
30 quid, 20 quid.
I think
quid,
less than that. Yeah, you, steps, if you just want one that just counts steps, it's done. And it's like just easy, it's cheap and sorted.
So there you go, Simon. Final words from you, fitness tracker fan?
I don't have one. And I'm not against them, but I don't have one. Maybe the day when I eventually get one is the day that the craze has died.
Give us a few years. I wonder how long it's been, Lee, since you've been criticising. 5 years?
But you're talking to a man who cycles 16 miles a day, 8 miles to work,
yeah,
and
but
8 miles
exactly.
back.
Exactly. Think how much you could show off to people.
But that's going to change soon, so I'll feel that. So
when
maybe
it changes.
You'll ask me in about 4 months' time, and I'll probably tell you I've got a fitness tracker whilst not refusing to stop and talk to you because I'm so busy walking.
Lee, what's your resting heart rate, mate?
At the moment, it's currently 97 beats per minute.
Good Lord,
in
that's
this
your
studio.
Resting?
Oh, no, my resting is 60.
All right, I'm way more chilled than you. See, Simon, you can't have this fun because you don't have one. I'm 64. I'm so chilled. My resting heart rate is 48.
Georgie, whenever I see you, my heart rate obviously hovers around about 100.
Yeah, doesn't it? I don't want to go.
As soon as I step away, my resting heart rate and my desk will be
all of
low
our
60s.
Listeners out there are thinking this is podcast gold. People talking about their resting heart rate.
Yeah. Wait till we get on to sleep. No. Right. Thank you very much. You can keep up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or you can download the app. And if you have any comments or questions for the team, or you want to tell us what your resting heart rate is or anything you'd like us to look into, Simon?
You can email us at editor@thisismoney.co.uk. Do not email us your resting heart rate, please. You can tweet us at thisismoney.co. You can tweet us at thisismoney. If you want to tweet us your resting heart rate, you can do that. We'll come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast, where you can join in the debate in the comments and tell other readers what your resting heart rate is.
This Is Money's podcast is brought to you in partnership with the Financial Services Compensation Scheme. Check your financial products at FSCS Protected at fscs.org.uk/thisismoney.